That's right, you. Have you done your yoga this morning? Or did you skip the class today? Is the urgent recounting of the harrowing news in the world that we present each day on The Takeaway, is it killing your relaxing yoga buzz? It's kind of our mission. Just take a deep breath. It's going to be all right. But for heaven's sakes, don't take my word for it.
Life is dependent upon breath. If the breath is gone, life is gone.
That's the voice of BKS Iyengar, the man credited with introducing yoga to the Western world, speaking at a public demonstration in Sydney, Australia, back in 1983. Iyengar died on Wednesday in the southern Indian city of Pune at the age of 95. The yoga movement has attracted millions to embrace what Iyengar termed a thoughtfully thoughtless path to health and fitness. The popularity of yoga has also driven a commercial industry, producing everything from yoga apps, special-powered rocks, mats, to herbal-scented wipes. Elizabeth Kadetsky joined the movement a long time ago. She's the author of First There Is a Mountain, a memoir of a year spent studying with BKS Iyengar. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thanks, John.
Why do you think Iyengar believed that this ancient tradition of yoga could be such a modern sort of trend and practice in the West?
Iyengar really believed in yoga as an ecumenical religion, in a sense. He often talked about the religion of yoga. But he never stressed its roots in Hinduism. He was interested in Vedanta and some of the ancient Indian philosophies. But it was something that even from the beginning in the 1950s when he was teaching in Bombay, he really reached out to an international audience. And that's not just Europeans, but in Bombay, there is a large population of Parsis or Zoroastrians of Iranian descent. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, it turned out that that was the community whom he was teaching from the very beginning.
The original monotheists, Zoroastrians.
Exactly, yes.
Well, by the time you get to the 1980s, yoga is introduced as almost an adjunct, a kind of spiritual adjunct to the fitness movement. How did that work, and who were the original adherents in the United States, do you think?
The original adherents in the United States were, you could say, sort of hippies in San Francisco and in Philadelphia. His first trip to the United States, actually it was his second trip to the United States, was Philadelphia. A teacher named Mary Dunn invited him. And he changed his message a little bit, I think, to make it a little bit more palatable to Americans at that time. And again, you know, it was very secular, very practical. He was interested very much in the physical side of it, and I think that's something that gets lost a little bit, that Iyengar never said the physical should be ignored and this is a spiritual practice. He always said that the body is the site of spirituality, and in that sense it was very much a mind-body practice.
What was it like studying with him?
It was thrilling and exciting, and he was such a character as well. I was studying with him, and I was also doing research for my book, First There Is a Mountain. And so I spent a lot of time with him, not just in the yoga studio, but in his library, where he would set up every afternoon after the morning classes. And he would sit in his library in his dhoti with his kind of wild hair. And he would sit at a desk going through newspapers and clipping articles about health. And a couple of students would be sitting in the library just reading, and I was one of them. And he would just kind of start talking. It would sound like he was talking to himself, but he was really talking to us, but he wasn't really making eye contact or anything. And he would say, look at this. Yoga can cure diabetes. This rise of diabetes in India, people don't understand. Yoga can cure everything. And he was really passionate and a proselytizer, a real proselytizer for yoga. But it was exciting, always exciting to be around him.
It's amazing that he really anticipates the health movement that goes way beyond hippies and the New Age movement. And, you know, you've got housewives in the suburbs going to yoga classes all over the United States, and there's not an issue at all with doing anything exotic. Yoga is very much mainstream. Did he believe that that was possible in the United States?
I think he did, but I think it's also important to put him in context of a larger history. And he was very much a genius, I think, and he very much developed his own style of yoga, as you can see in Light on Yoga, published in 1966. But he was definitely following from a tradition that preexisted him that really goes back, I think, to the turn of the century and to mind-body movements, even coming from Germany and Europe, that were popular in India as well. So the idea of mind-body tradition that could really help anyone was something that there was a precedent for very much.
What do you think the legacy is for yoga in this century? Will it become part of fitness, or will it become more of a Hindu-like tradition in the West as more and more of the East gets picked up by the West in this hemisphere?
Well, what I hope and what I think Iyengar would have hoped is that we'll see an even greater integration of the two. And I think that what he was always doing in India through his yoga practice and his yoga teaching going all the way back to the 50s and earlier was bringing together the East and the West. And he was never trying to forward yoga as an Indian tradition. He wanted it to be an international tradition. And I think in the same way, he really wanted to integrate mind and body and see it not only as a spiritual tradition and not only as a physical tradition, but to get a consciousness through the world where people understood that the mind and the body are the same.
Do you think the West perverts yoga by commercializing it and, charging, these kinds of Beverly Hills fees for yoga classes?
I think that's a great question. And I think that Iyengar might have said yes, but I actually disagree. I think that yoga was always a hybrid tradition. And what happened in India when Iyengar was coming up through yoga was, in a sense, a made-up tradition. And he and his teacher, Krishnamacharya, back in Mysore, they picked up some old medieval texts, and certainly they had learned some of the yoga poses from other people as well. But they created something very much, and it was a hybrid that used Western traditions as well. So I think that yoga has always been something that brings together different traditions and integrates itself into a kind of popular setting. So I personally have no problem with the bus ads and the yoga in Times Square, yoga in Central Park. I think more yoga is good for everyone, and I think Iyengar would agree with that.
You strike me as someone who knows all the poses in their Sanskrit names, but, the animal names are what I know. any favorites, any really hard ones that you still aspire to?
Well, let's see. There are some beautiful videos of Iyengar in the 1930s at the Jahamogan Palace in Mysore, where you can see him going up into a handstand where he puts his hand on the ground and then he straightens his back, both hands on the ground, straightens his back, leans his butt to the back, and with very straight legs lifts up his legs into a beautiful handstand. So that is the pose that I've been aspiring to for the last year or two.
Are you close?
Well, I was close, and then I got pregnant.
That's okay.
So I haven't tried it since
That's
then.
That's perfectly fine. My kids like a downward dog.
And that's a good one.
My wife tries to do flying crow.
That's a good one.
Yeah. As a paraplegic, there's not a whole lot I can do, but I still love to see everyone sort of splayed out in our living room doing
well. Iyengar
positions.
Would disagree with that.
Of course he would. Of course,
he would
it's no excuse.
You would be the best yoga student.
Yeah. Well, I can do talking radio man. I do that every morning. Elizabeth Kadetsky, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, John.
Elizabeth Kadetsky spent a year studying with BKS Iyengar to write the memoir First There Is a Mountain. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. Remember to breathe. This is The Takeaway.